This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Curdy B. Maybe I'll kick this one off. What do you say?
Are you kidding me? I love switching up. Variety is the spice of life, Scotty.
Well, I'm glad you think so. Here we go. Delicious. Delicious cheese fire shuts down Norwegian tunnel.
All right. All right. That smells interesting. That's all coming up on this episode of Bananas. Guys, gals, non-binary pals, welcome to Bananas. That is Scotty Landis.
That is the wonderful Kurt Brownoler. Welcome to the silliest little strange news podcast there ever was. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, do we have a treat today.
We certainly do. Our guest today is an artist and musician. She's the driving force behind the band La 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 La, and her new album, I Want the Door to Open, is available everywhere right now. Please welcome Lily West.
Woo! Woo!
We'll put cheers in.
Thank you.
In there.
We'll put a roaring applause in.
Thank
there.
You.
Of thousands. Audience of thousands.
Hey, Lily, what's up?
Nothing. What's up with you?
I'm great. I bruised my hips going down the slide to do laundry today. I have a slide off my deck, and I held a laundry basket, and I went down and just totaled myself.
Is a lie.
And this is true.
No, he does have a slide that goes off his desk. His deck, his back deck. It's really perfect. Did you kind of cut? Did you cut a space in the?
Yeah, I cut some of the hand railing off, and it's a 14 foot with a bump in the middle. And I held my hamper against me like a 50 pound child, and just went full speed into the ground. And was like, you know what? That was worth it.
Oh, so it's you hurt yourself when you shot off the end of the slide with the hamper.
Yeah, because I kind of had to tumble. I didn't really have my hands handy, so I just kind of did a roll into my backyard. But my clothes were already dirty, so the ones that hit the grass and dirt, they just went right in the washing machine. So I've had a great, great morning.
I'm so sorry to be a stickler about this situation, but is this slide... I just can't move on. For fun? You just have...
Yeah, it's for
fun. That's cool. Okay. Yeah.
Just to make life a little better.
That's
great.
I
grew up watching Pee-wee's Playhouse. I like to have a good time.
I used to live in Baltimore, and there was a building that my friend lived in Baltimore, and I do not know if they still do this, and I can't imagine they do, but it had a fire slide. So instead of an emergency exit, there was a, and it was across the street from a college campus. It's pitch black inside, but it's like a circular spiral slide metal that goes all the way down to the basement. And I mean, I guess it does get people out fast. And we would sit on cardboard boxes, and you like push swinging doors open that then close behind you, and then you're in pitch darkness just flying down in a circle, like over and over. You go down 8 stories in like 5 seconds. It's
so
fucking
cool.
Terrifying.
That's incredible.
And so much fun. It was incredible. Why not make escaping enjoyable? Right?
That's definitely that's a great platform that you should run on.
Yes, if Kurt runs for mayor of Atwater, it will be all homes have fire escape slides. And people would say, oh, hell yeah, we'll do that.
You got my vote. Combine that with every bathroom has a hook for your bag.
Yep, you have to. Like at an airport?
Mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't that everywhere? That's a great idea.
Lily, the new album is so good.
Oh, heck yeah.
Thank you.
It is wonderful. If you have not heard it, guys, you should get it right now. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to it nonstop, and so I just wanted to say thank you, honestly, for making something so beautiful.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a fan of the podcast.
Uh-oh. Do you want to get into some weird news then?
Well, yeah, let's break it off. Let's get into it. So this was sent in by K_A_Villanueva. Villanueva is a great last name.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I was Scotty Villanueva. Delicious, delicious cheese fire shuts down Norwegian tunnel.
I like the use of two deliciouses.
Oh, yeah. That's Ellie Hall from BuzzFeed, and she is... I mean, she's so good at her job. She's feeding that buzz constantly. Best in the beeswax. Your commute may be bad, but at least it's not blocked by flaming goat cheese.
Goat cheese?
Yeah, it was goat. Well, it's a weird type of cheese. So This is slightly old bananas. These are a little bit brown bananas, but I laughed as soon as she sent it to me. So we're going for it hardcore. A truckload containing 59,000 pounds of burning goat cheese has blocked a Norwegian tunnel for the past 6 days.
Oh, my God.
6 days.
That's so long.
Well, it's 59,000 pounds of cheese.
It has a long time to burn.
This is like a horrible
cheese could burn
math question they have. They're like, if you have 59,000 pounds of goat's cheese and it's inside of a tunnel, and how long will it take to burn?
Well, is it Norwegian tunnel? The cheese in question is a brown caramelized goat cheese known as Brunost. Brunost. And it caught fire as it was being transported through the Bratley Tunnel in Tisfjord. It's actually Tisfjord. I'm so sorry. Tisfjord to all our Norwegian listeners out there. Forgive me. The Kurds are separated from the whey, and then milk and cream are boiled to the brunost until it's a, quote, thick brown mass. That sounds good.
Yep.
That sounds good. The result is a sweet product with a hint of caramel. It's sticky, caramelized lactose, and it's extremely flammable.
And it's extreme? What part of it is extremely flammable? That's so... Okay. I'm just going to have to accept that it's extremely flammable. All right. I'll have to get over that part. How did it catch fire, Scotty?
Well, the fire was extinguished Monday by officials that warned that toxic gases emitted from the burning cheese keep the tunnel closed for the next week. No injuries have been reported, thank God. It took 4 days for firefighters to put out the flames. 4 days of fighting a cheese fire in a tunnel is it must smell in a way that is unthinkable.
Yeah.
Nobody was hurt, as I said. Norwegian Broadcasting said the tunnel was so badly damaged that geologists are checking it for safety.
Oh,
quote,
my God.
I didn't know that brown cheese burns so well, said Kjell Bjorn Venige of the Norwegian Public Roads Administration. But he confirmed that this was the first time cheese had caught fire on Norwegian roads in his 15 years of experience. So there you go.
So we don't know how it ignited. It just happened to ignite. It wasn't.
Ellie Hall from BuzzFeed. You know, media missed in the biz for this.
I like that.
Did not say how it sparked to life.
But they gave a detailed description on how to make the cheese.
Yes.
Yes. Right. So. We don't find out the most important thing. Instead, we find out the least. And it is in the first paragraph. How to make the cheese.
Brunost. It's called Brunost, and I guess it's like a Norwegian thing. It's what they do up there.
Well, they must be used to this then.
Yeah, maybe they burn it to stay warm. I don't know.
I hope it was just the truck driver finishing a cigarette and then flicking it out.
Oh, my God.
And then boom! Like, did it smolder or did it explode? Oh, there's so many unanswered questions about this cheese.
But it's also, how do you transport 59,000 pounds? Is it one? I guess it's just a big tractor trailer that, yeah, I agree. I actually looked this up on NPR and BuzzFeed. Neither one had it. So maybe this is a secret of the trade. Maybe Norwegian cheesemongers don't want us to know how this thing can catch fire.
That checks out. I've set a fire before.
Yeah, like intentionally or unintentionally?
No. I mean, not this one. The one that I'm choosing to share with you is not intentional.
What happened?
I lit I lit an incense. I used to live in this tiny apartment in Pilsen in Chicago that I filled with shit. I was like, you can swear, right?
Oh, yeah.
Get into
it. I filled with shit. I was like, had a bunch of I saw a photo of this apartment the other day and I was like, dear God, I can't believe I lived like that. Just like toys and like every mm-hmm. inch of the walls covered, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I lit a stick of incense and I stuck it into a plastic plant and went to sleep.
Wow.
I know.
That's pretty scary. So what did you wake up to?
I woke up and my friend Nick was staying with me and his... I remember waking up and thinking that he was making a lot of noise. And I was like, shut the fuck up, Nick. Why are you making noise in the middle of the night?
He's yelling, we're about to die. Yeah. Fire, fire, like, fire, fire.
He's like making this really high-pitched noise over and over again. and then I realized there's a fire alarm. And I also, okay, so I had this like pink flower light that emitted pink light. And I woke up and I thought... there was like a lot of smoke around, and I thought the pink like made it look like there was like I was inside fire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wow. Yeah.
So I woke up. That's great.
That's smart.
Very quickly realized that there was a fire, screamed fire. Nick shot up, and we ran outside, and luckily the fake plant was in a metal pot. So there was just burning plastic fire contained to this metal pot, and we ran outside and Nick threw up.
Oh, Nick. Nick.
Yeah.
Nick pukes so under stressful situations, and we love him for it.
Was it winter time? Were you guys outside in the winter in Chicago?
I think it was fall.
Mwah. A lovely time in Chicago.
Everyone says that.
I don't know.
Are you being sarcastic?
I don't know. I'm just assuming it is.
I don't like anything except spring.
You don't even like summer.
I mean, that's not true. Summer's great. Summer's great.
Yeah, summer.
To me, it just seems very obvious. The cold ones are bad.
Yes.
And the warm ones are good.
Yeah.
That makes sense. When I was when I was in high school, my funny bit, the thing I would do at music festivals whenever a really like kind of heavy band would go on, I would start on one side of the mosh pit and I would like have my friends on the other side. And then I would just calmly walk right directly through the middle, waving to my friends and smiling like I didn't know the mosh pit was even happening around me. And the wildest one I ever did, and you saying that reminded me of this, was when the band Prodigy, they were like closing the WHFS festival at RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C. And all day, it's like 40 bands for $40. But it's everybody. It's the B-52s. It's Wyclef. It's No Doubt. It's like, but then as it gets darker, the bands get a little harder. So it's like the Crystal Method. And then it was headlining or closing that night was Prodigy. And their big hit was Firestarter. And when they came on, that the whole front of the stage was this enormous mosh pit, and in like a 40-second walk, like running the gauntlet, I just walked so casually, like waving to people like I'm having like a nice little vacation trip down the boardwalk. People are just getting punched and thrown around all around me. It was like Moses parting the Red Sea or whatever. It was incredible. And then my friend was like, do it again. And I was like... Yep, just walked all the way around the outside. That was my bit I probably did that 30 times over 10 years. To me, it was the funniest thing in the world because nobody punches. It was so weird. I would just like walk so calmly. They were like, I was invisible to them or something.
That is crazy.
It was the best. That's a good near death. Kurt, have you ever had a near death experience with fire or smoke or anything?
With fire or smoke? I don't think so. But that story did make me think of all ages hardcore shows on the Jersey Shore.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday all ages hardcore shows. And I remember we would go and it was like, I think it was $5, 8 bands. And it would be from like 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park.
So fun.
And I remember seeing this band, Terminus, and like the number of people who were there, it was like the scariest pit I've ever been in. I think I was probably like 14 or 15, because it was like only like 40 people or something, and everyone was like just kicking and punching because they had to like in some way prove that they were like that this local band was like that they were more hardcore than anybody else. And I was like 15 and I was like excited about a mosh pit, but had never like really been in one.
Yes.
And I got a boot to the face so hard that I like saw stars and like lost my glasses.
Oh boy.
And I was like, oh, Terminus, I rue you. And never went to see Terminus again.
That's pretty fun.
But they were beautiful shows. Those were like long days of just smoking cigarettes outside and then going in and watching a terrible band for 5 minutes and then going back outside and watching smoking cigarettes.
But it's sad for people with glasses and mosh pits.
Yeah. Yeah.
That must have been hard for you, is what I'm saying.
But as soon as you started to look for glasses, people would like make space for you and
would
help you find your glasses. Because it's always like, it's an emergency. We're having fun, though. We're still having fun. Where did you come up playing, Lily?
In Chicago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I moved here when I was 19 to go to art school. And I sort of stumbled into like a DIY music scene here, which
was so great.
It was really cool. I mean, I didn't understand DIY. Like, I'd only been to shows.
Right.
At like an event space,
yeah,
or like the smallest place. I didn't even really know there were shows at bars or anything, and being in these like basements and, I mean, it's why I started playing music because I didn't play music before.
Yeah,
I moved here, but then seeing everyone's so experimental here and like encouraging of each other and seeing people like rolling on the ground screaming and that being their band, I was like, oh, maybe I could also have a band.
That's
no experience.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, I mostly accredit my music stuff to my friend Emily Kempf. She like was in this band called Super Magical. Now she's in a band called Dead, which I highly recommend. DEHD. Yeah. But I saw them perform live. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. You have to be my best friend, and she complied. And she like took me on my first DIY tour and showed me how to do it. I didn't know you could book your own tour. I didn't know you could play in people's houses.
Yes,
I just had no idea. She was like, there's no rules.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
That reminds me of like that time where like coming up in New York in like the alt comedy scene where everyone was just like, the more fucking weird it was, the more people went apeshit for it. Like, if you were doing the most insane thing, like
that's
that was what people came to see. And
yeah.
If you were just telling jokes, get out of town.
That's kind of, I mean, there's Chicago has a, or at least the past couple of years, the experimental comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Has been sort of off the chain.
Oh, it's great there. Chicago is a great comedy town. I think Scott and I always say, like, if you get good in Chicago, then when you move to LA or New York, like, people are like, who's this?
You're good. Yeah, you're fully cooked when you get to the cities where you want to be on TV and stuff. There was this band they're a Baltimore band called, I think, Oxes or The Oxes.
Yeah,
and I
Oxes.
Saw them. They were so cool.
Oxes were so cool. And they play wirelessly and
yes,
like walk
that's
through
what I
the
was
crowd.
Say.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So there was, they came and played a college show in a dorm basement that had a huge like social space. And my friend was like, hey, let's go see this band. And they go down there like rowdy rock. It was so fun. But then the two guitarists had wireless guitars. So while they were playing this rock show, they would just sprint into the crowd. And I remember wanting to start a band in that exact moment. And I didn't. It's actually probably one of my only true regrets in life is that I just didn't start some college band. But the funniest is the guy ran right past my friend and I just soloing. Then he just disappeared out these doors. And then we look out the windows of the dorm room and out in like, the lawn.
Oh my God.
Just running by playing the guitar back and forth. And I remember being like, I love Oxes. They were such a cool band.
They were so cool. I was buddies with those guys. They would come over all the time when I lived in Baltimore. They were such a fun group.
Wireless guitars. Lily, I don't know if you're a fan of it, but lift it from the Oxes because it was so entertaining. God, it was fun.
I would love that. When I have to play, I used to be like, guitar was my thing, and now whenever I have to pick it up, I'm like, oh, here we go. Much prefer the songs where I just am singing and I can like move all around. So
yeah,
I used to have a wireless like a Britney mic for this.
That's fun.
I did a solo project. I'm doing air quotes because Lala's kind of a solo project now, but it was called Blanket, or I also called it rat, small rat. And
sure.
Such a DIY situation.
You got to call it something.
Yeah. And I had a Britney mic and I made these like, it was so poorly done. I really like, I have love for myself at this time, but I like yes. sewed these costumes for me and my two friends who were my backup dancers that had like hearts on the, we all had these matching white with hearts outfits and yeah. white bucket hats. But I'm horrible at sewing. I'm not very good at dancing and I choreographed the whole thing.
Me too.
And we did it like karaoke style. Like I would be using the Britney mic. But all of that music, I had not recorded anything professionally in my life. So I recorded it all into my laptop microphone.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So it sounded at batshit insane.
That's kind of cool.
It's like wall of sound, but not in like a shoegaze way.
Yeah.
Singing like into a wall. Like,
just big like, noises through a condenser mic.
Yeah, really, really intense.
That's fun.
Oh, that's really funny. I wish I could have been at one of those shows. You guys, do you want to hear another one before we do?
Yeah, we're off and running this epi.
Here we go. This is an old bananas as well. This is it's a historical okay. bananas. This was sent in by Amy Lynn.
Thank you, Amy Lynn. This is
from the Harvard Crimson in 1963, March 9th, 1963. College may ban animal nudity. The Society for Indecency to Naked Animals, SENA, a national association formed 4 years ago to, quote, protect our children from the sight of naked horses, cows, dogs, and cats.
No.
We'll attempt to start a campus chapter of the organization at Harvard. Bruce Spencer, vice president of SENA, told Crimson yesterday. I will skip down a little bit and then tell you guys more about this.
I mean, have you seen a naked horse? It is.
Oh, yes, scary. I have. Ooh, I'm going to write a little note. Thank you for that.
I guess I haven't really seen many clothed horses.
Not lately. Not these days.
You gotta get them in some clothes. The society spends most of its time distributing literature, quote, decency today means morality tomorrow.
Oh boy.
And serving printed summonses to persons found violating SENA's constitution by appearing in public with naked animals. These documents.
Oh my God.
Warn...
That can't be. You're just walking down the street and there's a naked animal there. You can't control that.
I prefer it. Honestly, I prefer it.
So this is, just so you guys know, this is from its Wikipedia. The Society for Indecency to Naked Animals was a satirical hoax concocted by serial prankster Alan Abel. The group used the language and rhetoric of conservative moralists for the ostensible aim of clothing,
Wonderful.
Quote, indecent naked animals,
Wonderful.
Including domestic pets, barnyard animals, and large wildlife. It is basically, he had his buddy... Buck Henry, assumed the role of group president, Clifford Prout Jr. And he appeared as Clifford Prout Jr. in television news and talk show appearances. He was like an improv guy, so he would just like, he was just
Strauss.
Just like Kay Strauss. Over time, the history of SENA and some of its specific aims were codified into coherent, if unlikely, backstory. The group had been founded some years before by G. Clifford Prout Sr. and was being carried on by his son. An alleged debate within SENA was how large an animal had to be to require clothing. The official position quoted by Prout was, quote, any dog, cat, horse, or cow that stands higher than 4 inches or longer than 6 inches. So this, it does seem like they either tricked the Harvard Crimson, which is the Harvard newspaper, or they're very deep into the joke. They had a marching song called Wings of Decency, which begins, high on the wings of SENA, we fight for the future now. Let's clothe every pet and animal, whether dog, cat, horse, or cow. G. Clifford Prout, our president, he works for you and me, so clothe all your pets and join the march for worldwide decency.
I should cover that.
Yes, right?
You should cover that.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. That's such a good idea. Please. Oh, my God. If you do that, please send us a copy of it.
This is a beautiful story. I love this. Is, you know, this is adjacent to me to having a slide on your back porch. Okay. This is like,
yeah,
let's live life, you know.
Yeah, you only go around once, might as well live it up.
Let's make a committee, a fake committee.
So this is so strange that our first story and the second story have this weird connection, because you're talking about the Oxes, Scotty.
Yes.
And when I lived in Baltimore, I formed an organization called FUDC, and one of the Oxes guys would come over all the time, and then later they formed something called BRC, the Baltimore Rowdy Coalition.
Yeah, sure.
But FUDC was all about, because we had gone to see Unwound at the Black Cat, and I was like dancing because I loved Unwound at the time, and some guy told me to calm down, and I was like, I will not calm down, this is rock and roll. And then we came back to Baltimore and I was just fuming about it, and we started FUDC, and which was, we would just have like shows in our basement, essentially, and there was a lot of asbestos. There's a lot of asbestos in our basement, which we found out only later that it was bad. But it was like you would come up after a show and just be like caked, like your nostrils would be like black from the dust that was on the ground, and it was all asbestos dust. So if something happens,
I'm surprised you're alive.
I blame on that. But yeah, it was so fun to have like a fake society. Like where people were like, what does FUDC stand for? And we had all these different like things that it stood for. But we made T-shirts and stickers, which is the fun part when you're 18 or 19 years old. And then we just had punk shows in our basement, and it was the best. I highly recommend everyone form fake organizations right now.
It's not hard to do.
No, just there's that one guy who did Birds Aren't Real.
Yeah, that's growing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Love Birds Aren't Real.
That's a great idea.
Thank you. Growing. Shout out Birds Aren't Real.
Stuff now. They're driving across the country. Yeah, they're really going for broke. I love that. Yeah, we had the fake fraternity Alpha Beta Lupa, and mostly we just
that's great.
It was my friend Skip's house. Mostly we just jumped out of trash cans to scare people going to frat row, and you know, reeled wigs across the street on fishing line to scare people. It was great. It was a great fraternity. We wore pots on our heads. It was wonderful. I love that so much. When you were talking about, the Naked Horses. Yes. So I don't really argue or fight. Lily, you don't know this about me. Kurt knows this about me. I don't really ever lose my temper. I never get loud. I'm very, very calm.
That's troubling, let me say.
Yes, exactly. I know. I write
one
horror
day,
movies.
One day something horrible is gonna happen.
Or sensational. Hey, somebody lift this car off my child. I can. So I'm in high school, and my girlfriend, when I was 16 or 17, we were having like an argument in the car. And when you're young, I think a lot of young people really like to debate, or at least figure out like what they stand for, and it's kind of fun. Now I could really truly care less. And so I remember we were in a pretty intense argument. I'm driving. She's riding passenger. We're kind of in this area in Maryland called Hunt Valley, where it's a lot of horse farms and orchards and stuff like that. And we were having like a true argument. And it gets to the point where we are driving in silence, like even radio off, just which is crazy when you're 16 years old. But there was tension in the Corolla. The Corolla was overflowing with true tension. And we round this corner, and there's a horse standing there with a full erection, and we just both started laughing so hard, because they are like the arm of an NBA player hanging out from between this horse's legs. And we just started laughing, and it kind of squashed that beef, and suddenly we were like reunited again, and it was sort of a valuable lesson. You never know what's around the bend. It might be a Choiseau that you've never seen before.
A Choiseau. Horsecock's cure all. That's the point of that story.
That's the lesson in that story. God. Life
we
changing.
Have a phrase in the band, Shitty Pony. Shitty Pony. I don't even know how to describe what it means. Just this one time, you know, when you're on a road trip, which is what tour is, whenever there's an animal, it's like, cows, look, there's cows. Yeah. Everyone, look, there's like, it's not a gas station. There's living things. Yeah. And one day someone was like, someone was like, I think it's me. I was like, oh my God, there's a hole. There's a hole. And my bandmate Abby like looked up from their phone and was like, yeah, that's a shitty pony. I don't care about that. It's not impressive.
I don't have time for it. I'm sorry. I don't have time for anything less than a thoroughbred racer.
Yeah. Make me look at a shitty pony.
Scotty, tease us with one. Let's take a break.
Okay, now we'll do a real teaser. Sent in by Karen Kilgariff, our benevolent overlord.
Look at that.
Plumber finds thousands of dollars in cash envelope stuffed inside toilet wall at Joel Osteen's mega church.
Whoa.
Of that when we come back to Bananas.
Back, folks.
Yes, we are.
Welcome back. And before we get back to our fantastic guest, I do want to do one quick shout out.
Please,
here
banana mail.
Jamie Justice. She said, "Dear Banana Boys, I want to give a shout out to AJ, the best bananimal. I am proud of you every day." For context, he's my 13-year-old, and we listen to Bananas every day on the drive to and from school. You don't have to read that part, though, because he'll die of embarrassment, and I'll wind up on my favorite murder.
Yes.
Thank you, Jamie. And AJ, we got your back, bud. Don't you worry about being 13. We are on your side. It's a cool age.
When I was 14 or 13 or something, I would play Joanna Newsom in the car, and my little brothers, who were significantly younger than me, would be like, "Why do we have to listen to this weird music? I'm a scary lady. I don't like it."
People have visceral responses to, especially the first album, I feel like, because it is so specific and unique. I loved it. I loved that album so much. But I definitely remember playing it for people and people getting like angry at me. Like, this is what you This is what you like.
I think that I love everything she's ever done. But I don't, and I, including the first album, I don't know if I would have gotten into it initially if I was not sort of like pretentious at that time.
Oh yeah, I get that.
I probably like pretended to like it until I did like it.
Yes, that can happen. That certainly can happen.
Scotty, do you have any other shout outs?
Yeah, I do actually. I'll do one right here. This is Amber wants to give a little shouty to Ariel. I believe it's her sister. They were at your Philly show this summer, Kurt, giggling in the front row. Ooh. Ariel works as a behavioral therapist and works with autistic children, and she has incredible patience, and she's dedicated to her career. And she's responsible for turning their entire family into bananimals. So, Amber and Ariel, thank you so much. There's a little shout-out for you.
Yay! Awesome. We, of course, are here with the wonderful musician Lily West. Lily, what is going on with La 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 right now?
We just, as you said, we put out an album October 8th, which is available anywhere that you get music. That's just a thing I hear people say.
But what do you prefer?
I've never
What's
said
ideal
that.
Ideal for you?
Okay, ideally, can you please buy it?
Yeah, but where? Like, I always hear people be like,
on Bandcamp or from my label, Hardly Out Sub Pop. From them, from a record store.
Ooh, heard of it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you have vinyl? Do you have vinyl of the record?
Oh, absolutely. Sweet. We got vinyl. We got cassette. We got CD.
I had my first album on cassette. They were very hard to sell. I could only sell them in Portland and Austin.
That's really funny.
Well, I'm buying a vinyl. Forget it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's
Thank you.
Be so fun. Of course. But Bandcamp, a lot of our Bananimals will buy it up on Bandcamp.
Okay. Yeah, Bandcamp's ideal. And then we have a tour. We have a Europe tour in February, Omicron providing. Then U.S. March, April? Is that... Yeah, that's the month after March, April?
Yeah. All year?
I never know You could literally any day, you could ask me what day it was, and yes. I would believe that it was any day.
Yes, you are a true artist. I'm the same way. I once Googled what month is it when I woke up.
Exactly.
It was May.
And that's a beautiful month, and I bet you were happy to hear that.
I was pumped.
Thank God.
I hate April. Month. I was stoked for May.
In LA, they are indecipherable for each
other.
That's
right. That's the problem.
True.
Lily, have you ever woken up when you were on tour or traveling and the room was dark and you didn't remember exactly where you were, what room you were in?
Literally, that still happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
Even though I haven't, I mean, we did 4 shows in October in different places, but my parents also live in England and mm-hmm. I sort of live in New Mexico as well as Chicago, and that happens to me constantly. And yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird feeling, isn't it? Where you have to lie there in the darkness and go, okay, where am I? What does this bed feel like? What does this room smell like? What can I hear right now? And sometimes, like, I've had those lucid times between, like, wakefulness, like, just waking up, where I think I'm, like, in my college house, like, when I was a senior in, and it takes me a minute to be like, wait, am I in Brooklyn? Wait, I'm in Los Angeles. It's the weirdest thing. It's like your brain goes on a little time travel trip for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've woken up, and I've woken up a lot of disgusting places.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Where am I? How disgusting is it?
This morning I woke up, and I had a dream, which felt like it was a full 8 hours, a dream. You know, I'm sure it was 20 minutes or whatever.
Right.
Where it was just 8 full hours of me working as a waiter. Just nothing.
Serving.
Nothing crazy happened. It was just like working as a waiter. Like, I took a lot of people's orders. I could completely see the space it was in as a place I've never been before. And it's just so weird when that happens. Like, is this tapping into some other universe version of myself for just like a moment, you know?
Yeah.
I think your brain knows you're going to get a role soon. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have time to study what it's like to be a waiter.
Mm-hmm.
But
I have to
now
dream
you know.
It. Thank you, Lily. Thank you.
Just
you are welcome.
Don't
thank me. Thank your subconscious for knowing the future. And whoever costs you as a waiter, thank you to them.
Tip 20%. Okay. Here we go. Karen Kilgariff sent this in. We were actually on a little phone call, gabbing it up like high school buddies. And she goes, oh, did you see this story? And she texted me, plumber finds thousands of dollars in cash envelopes stuffed inside toilet wall at Joel Osteen's or Osteen's mega church. This one was Jamie Ross for The Daily Beast, the best in the business, of course.
Yeah.
A plumber made a shocking discovery when fixing a toilet at televangelist Joel Osteen's megachurch in Houston last month. Thousands of envelopes stuffed full of cash and checks. The guy, we're going to call the plumber Justin, apparently, called into a radio morning show to discuss the discovery he made when he was called to the church on November 10th. So, recent bananas.
Uh-huh.
There was a loose toilet connected to the wall, so we removed a tile. We went to go to remove the toilet. I moved some insulation and found about 500 envelopes that fell out of the wall, and I was like, quote, oh, wow, end quote. The plumber went on to say that around 3,000 total envelopes stuffed with cash were recovered. Lakewood Church confirmed the discovery of the, quote, undisclosed amount of cash. But this is when it gets very true crimey and interesting.
Okay.
So Houston Police Department was notified about this.
Uh-huh.
7 years ago, $600,000 worth of checks and cash were reported stolen, but no arrests were made. The $600,000 stolen, along with written credit card information, were stolen. They were donations, like, so they were actually like given or physically handed in.
Uh-huh.
to the church.
So a spokesman for the Houston Police Department said it was $200,000 in cash, which is what, and then $400,000 in checks were stolen from the church's safe sometime early afternoon Sunday or Monday morning when a church employee first discovered the money was missing. So
they said it was stolen.
Yeah.
So I mean, does that mean he goes to jail? I mean, like, is the FBI involved here? Like,
No. They're not saying he stole it.
When it gets even crazier.
Our old buddy,
you know, Pastor Joel, encouraged those who made those contributions
to
on
make
March
them again,
8th or
right?
9th. Well, he just said, monitor your bank and credit card statements, guys, because there could be fraudulent charges. But here you go. Those funds are fully insured. And we are working with our insurance company to restore the stolen funds to the church.
There it is. See,
there
it's a scam.
It is.
He should be in jail right now.
Righteous
he should be in jail.
Gemstones is real.
Whoa, reality television. And then, of course, he's got $200,000 in cash that he can spend whenever he wants to, when he wants to flee the country.
I don't understand why he wouldn't. If this is, I don't get it.
This is so
I'm leaving. I don't
criminal.
Get it.
It's so criminal. It's why? Incredible.
Wait, who? I don't understand why people are going to be like listening, shouting at me.
Nah.
If it's insured, did they not get that money when it was reported stolen?
They did. And so
they get double money. That's so criminal.
They get double money. So they keep the money, they report it as stolen, and they get reimbursed for it being stolen.
Okay, follow-up question.
Yes. And also they have money that is off the record. Do you know what I mean? Like, they just have access to a bunch of cash now that doesn't exist.
Makes you wonder.
Lucky. Lucky them. If you found $200,000 in cash, would you tell anyone?
No. Wow. I'd keep it for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the situation. Like, if it was like a briefcase that was like, don't open, I would be like, okay, I'm on a reality television show. But yes, if I found 200K like in the woods,
yeah,
I would look around, casually lean down with my right hand extended, scoop it into my clothing, and sprint to my car as fast as humanly possible.
You really also, do, right? Horror movies.
Kurt and I once did a thing with $10,000, like, and we thought $10,000 was going to look so significant, but when it's
so
in hundreds,
doesn't.
It's so unimpressive.
It's really
wait. What did you do with it?
We did this thing, this bit where we took Kyle Kinane, this is a comedian, and we brought him to a casino, and
he was blindfolded and he couldn't hear, so he had no idea where he was going.
Yeah, and we brought him into a private room where there was like one blackjack table.
Yes.
And then I gave him a briefcase that was chained to my arm,
an attaché case.
case. And I popped it open. And we were expecting $10,000 to, like, look kind of... It was just, like, 100 bills, like, just spread out, you know? And then we basically said to him, you can have this money.
Yeah.
And you can just keep it and we'll leave. Or you have to play it all. You have to bet it all on one hand
one
blackjack.
Hand. Yeah.
And so he bet it. And we did not, like, rig this or anything. And he won.
Yeah.
He won in the craziest way.
Five cards.
He won in five cards, but he actually got 21 in five cards.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Kurt looked at me. I was producing. Kurt was on camera. And he looked at me like kind of pissed because he thought I rigged it because it's such an unlikely thing. But it was the craziest part. So you can't fake a casino. If it's a real dealer and you're in a real casino, you can't just – there's no such thing as like we're playing games because it's so strict. So Kyle gets like a 2, a 5, a 6 – a 4, a 5, and a 2. Or it was like some crazy thing like that. And there was a couple other people playing at the table, a couple other players. And this old lady sitting to Kyle's right goes, he hit blackjack. She did the math faster than the dealer, than the producers, than Kurt, than Kyle. And he did. So we doubled his money. And then we couldn't give it away. We had like $100 bills.
Yeah, and then we went outside and gave them away. Well, we gave a bunch of it away.
But people won't take money. It's so weird.
It is so weird. We were just like handing out $100 bills. And then we took like $1,000 of it and I tied it to some balloons and we released the balloons. And we were expecting it to like travel and it had like a little note like, if you get this, let us know here. It's a gift from us. And the balloons went up across the street and then just got stuck in a tree.
Yeah, crashed in a tree. So we had to knock on the door and tell them.
You should look inside. Yeah, you should look inside these balloons. And then it was like
thousands
a family. Yeah, it was $1,000, and the family was just going to use it for their daughter's quinceañera, and they were incredibly psyched.
Oh my God, cute.
It was so funny. But yeah, it was so. When you open that attaché case and see what 10 grand looks like, you're like, oh, Is that all? That really sucks. Yeah.
My great-grandmother, mischievous Welsh woman, lived across the street from a pub, and she used to blow up a balloon and tie a note to it that said, like, congratulations, you have won a free drink at this pub. And then she would just, like, put it down, like, sort of down the street and just wait at her window and watch people, like, run up really excited with the balloon, go in, and then just come out looking really sad and disappointed.
She wasn't there to buy him a drink. She would just watch it happen.
No, she just watched it.
That's fantastic. I love that. I like it more if she had a running tab there, but I love that so much.
I want to do that, but have a running tab at the bar, right? Just be like, here, if anybody comes in with this note, we'll cover their drink and just not have any. And then I love that idea. We should do that. We should do that.
Is there a way that we could do it out here where a balloon would not sail into the Pacific Ocean and kill?
Well, you just don't put helium in it.
Oh, you just leave it somewhere.
Yeah,
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then have it like weighed down. Or if you do have helium in it, have like a rock and a string so it's just like waving in the wind. And then people would find the note. I like that idea.
My buddy Lee. Lee, if you're listening, let's do it for Alma. There's a great cider bar in Los Angeles called Alma. It's on Virgil, right near where Hot Tub is. Let's do it. Lee, text me, and we'll go plant this somewhere in the city with one free cider at Alma. And,
oh, yeah, it's a cider bar, right?
It's awesome. That place rocks. But we'll do it. Yeah, we'll Kurt and I'll start a little tab, and if you find that balloon, we'll put a QR code on it or something so not everybody and their mom's doing it. I love that. Your grandma's cool.
What was your grandma's name?
Grandma?
We'll just say grandma.
This was my great-grandmother.
Okay, it was your great-grandma.
Who I never met. My grandmother's name is Elizabeth, and she is the light of my life.
That counts. So you do know your grandmother and that she does have a first name. That's cool.
So we'll just say great-grandma invites you to one drink.
There
if you don't mind us stealing your great grandmother's
idea. Oh, please.
Idea.
No, that's beautiful. I love that.
All right, good. We're going to do it. Should we have one more?
I think we should definitely do one more because I'm just having the time of my life.
All righty.
Lily, I love your music so much. It's so ethereal and your lyrics are wonderful. You have a great voice. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. It's so funny. It's like surreal to... like hear the intro,
and then
it's like, oh, I have to speak.
Yeah, now you're hanging.
Oh, I'm not just listening. Oh, it's me, it's the person.
And let us know when you come to Los Angeles. We'll come out to your show.
Hell yeah, that would be fantastic.
I'll knock Kurt's glasses off, and we'll be the two tall white guys moshing in the front.
All right, here it is. Folks, this was sent in by Jessica Hemi at J_Hemi_creations on Instagram. You should go check her out. She is an amazing artist.
Cool.
From Ventura, California. This was in Wired, written by nobody.
No.
Oh, wait. It was written by Robin Andrews, who is BITB.
So, so good.
Meet the cyberpunk albatrosses scanning for secret explosions.
Oh, cool.
Here it is. Sometimes the most important sounds are the ones that cannot be heard. Take infrasound. Acoustic waves below the range of human hearing, although nuclear weapons blasts, mid-air meteor explosions, volcanic paroxysms, and angry thunderstorms make plenty of noise people can hear up close. Mm-hmm. The infrasound these phenomena emanate can also circumnavigate the globe. A lot of big words there. If a scientist is half the world away, their infrasound detector may be able to pick it up. Despite its promise as a remote sensing technique, you can't register these sounds in infrasound everywhere. The world's oceans are not only cacophonous, but the absence of land, particularly within the southern hemisphere, has made placing detectors a seemingly insurmountable challenge. But for Olivier Denouden, an acoustics researcher at the Royal Netherlands Meteorological Institute, the solution to this conundrum was obvious. Put infrasound sensors in tiny backpacks and get albatrosses to wear them.
Oh, sure, of course. That makes sense.
Sure.
Turning.
Why not?
Yeah, easy. Turning the Southern Ocean's largest seabirds into cyberpunk spies, quote, was a shot in the dark, says Dan Uden. But his team reported this August in the Journal of Geophysical Research Letters, it actually worked as those feathered friends flitted above the frigid waters. That's pretty good. Feathered
Whoa,
friends flitted.
Say that again.
That's good. That's some biz. About the frigid waters. Midway between southern Africa and Antarctica, the instruments in their backpacks recorded various sources of infrasound, suggesting that it's possible to listen for all sorts of distant booms without requiring any land to sight detectors.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of people saying it's amazing. So anyway, yeah, mostly this is for volcanoes. To like, there's a lot of volcanoes that erupt that we don't know about ever. And so they're finding out a bunch of stuff.
That's pretty cool.
This is really,
so the albatrosses
really cool.
are wearing these things and it's working.
yeah,
it
tiny
would
backpacks.
Be working if birds were real, but they're not.
Yeah, birds aren't real.
This
Heard
is proving it that they're that they're just government drones.
Yeah,
you know,
really,
it
really
hasn't
are.
Occurred to me before that bananas is like a really good breeding ground for like bad band names.
Oh,
incredible.
Yes. Cyberpunk albatrosses.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Katie, can you flag that? That's a good title for this episode.
That is.
Cyberpunk albatrosses, please.
Albatrosses are so big, man. I wonder how big these backpacks are. They don't have a photo of the backpacks, which is a real deep bummer.
Just JanSports. Just JanSports with those loops. They just have their smallest feather just in the loopholes of it. Just like, what's up? Want to eat applesauce during gym?
I remember
for a band, applesauce during gym.
Yeah,
I think yeah.
Go ahead.
Applesauce gym. Sorry, I'm editing.
Applesauce gym. Yeah.
Applesauce gym. Just singing.
That's another. That's another band name right there.
Exactly.
I remember in college, I wore a very uncomfortable backpack.
Yes.
Which was because it was army issue. I was like, for like a year of my life, I only shopped at like Army Navy surplus stores. And so I had like a backpack from, I think it was from the Korean War, but it
Very
was like, it had a metal outside frame.
Normal.
And then it was just like green canvas and it just dug into my back and it really hurt and I hated it.
Great.
But you felt that it was cool.
But I felt it was cool. And I would wear combat boots and green, big, kind of like big pants, like baggy pants with cargo pockets and an army jacket. So I was always...
You were Lieutenant Dan, basically. You just had one extra leg, though.
And I had shaved all of my hair except for just
a
tuft
like Robert,
in front.
What's his... Like Taxi Driver.
Yes.
Like, did you have a Fight Club poster?
No, I hated Fight Club. I hated Fight Club.
Oh, because it was too, it was like too popular.
It was too, it was too macho. It was too macho.
For sure. For sure.
And it was just like a tuft of hair that I would sculpt into two horns.
Yep.
Oh my God.
So I looked, and I also had just these big Costco sunglasses.
Incredible.
That like looked like a grandmother would wear. Yep. They were like big and square, like this big. I looked crazy. And I never realized this until...
Was that the whole of college?
That was for 1 year of college that I was really into that look. Yeah. No, this was second year.
Okay.
And I was also like, I was really into acid at the time. Like, it was I was going through a whole thing.
Cool.
But
I love it.
I like that it's like cross-genre, though.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
Someone really into acid, you wouldn't really expect to have, like, the little devil horns. So,
Military.
You were doing your own thing. And
yes.
Cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was buddies, my two best friends, John Polimeni and Hank Baker, and unbeknownst to us, unbeknownst to the three of us until like a year later when we found out every day. And I noticed this now every day, Hank would wear the exact same thing, which is this blue Paramount shirt and these blue pants and he had blue shoes.
Cool.
And John always only dressed in black. He's a big industrial guy.
Yeah.
And so we would just walk around campus always together, one guy in all green, one guy in all blue, and one guy in all black. And people called us the Power Rangers.
Unbeknownst
to us.
Oh my God.
That's great.
You know, I'm obsessed with the narrative arc of your life.
Kurt did college right. You should be so... Do it all in college. Like, anybody that goes to college and is boring, you are missing the point. Go wild for 4 years. Try everything.
Yes.
Make it... Call it collage. Get into it and be weird, because, like... When you step out in the real world, it'll slowly polish you and grind you down to khaki. So live it up.
Go for it.
Maybe, can I add, maybe don't get a big tattoo of a scary clown on your leg.
Maybe.
Because you might regret that.
Sure.
If you did that, which...
This sounds like it's hitting a little close to home, Lily.
Okay.
You have some regrets about this.
It's a genuinely scary clown?
Yeah. It was scary.
Was it like based on it or anything? What was the inspiration?
The whole bottom half of my leg. It was, so my friend, bless his heart, is a very talented tattoo artist, and I have some other tattoos from him that are great. But I will not name him to not throw him under the bus.
He did something.
This was also like when I was... I dropped out of college after a year, but college age.
Yeah.
I did do everything weird.
Good.
And like I got a ton of tattoos without thinking about it. And most of them are cool, but I let him improvise on my leg. He like free-handed this thing on my leg. And I cannot emphasize how much it looked like a giant yellow dick.
Oh boy. Like,
with balls, like
not a great color for a ding dong. You don't want a giant yellow one. Little John.
No. And like with veins, the balls, it had a cross on the head. And I had just started playing music pretty recently, and every photo of me playing music, you know, if you're on I was playing like basements and stuff, but if you're on a stage, the full shortening, like the bottom half of my leg was the big, like most of the photo, and it's just this giant yellow dick. So I said, I'd like to get this covered up.
Yeah.
And I went to another friend who's also a very talented tattoo artist, and we sort of... I mean, I can't blame him. We sort of like workshopped this scary clown together. And we did it over the yellow dick, rendering it basically impossible to remove.
There you go. That's an upgrade. You did the right thing here.
Yeah, it's better than a yellow dick. The scary clown is way better.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So that's my advice. Go crazy. Don't get a scary clown.
Yeah, no yellow dicks, no scary clowns.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're super into that, and then get a scary clown with a yellow dick. Just double down and scare your parents.
Lily, thank you so much for being on Bananas.
Thank you so much for having me. What a thrill.
Tell us, where can people find you one more time? Plug your stuff.
Socials, whatever.
Okay, you can find me on social media, Lily Lala Music, LILLIE is how you spell my name, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I recently made a TikTok, much to my chagrin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is
like
correct.
Horror, my horror.
Yeah.
Because of a viral video. This is another story.
It's okay.
So I'll just throw it in.
Please.
These posters were made and put up all around Chicago for my release show at Talia Hall. And I didn't think it said this.
Okay.
But everyone else thinks it says ka-ka-ka-ka.
Ka-ka-ka-ka.
Yes. And there's a viral video of this girl being like, I just want to know who the fuck this is, because I see this everywhere I go. Who are you, bitch? Who is Miss Kaka?
That sounds pretty good to me.
It's a great video. But I made a TikTok to participate in this.
You
have to. This is what they tell me. So I'm on there. And we're touring Europe in February and full US or full North America, mostly full March and April.
All right. Well, when you come to LA, let us know. We will be there.
Oh, yes.
I will hold you to that.
Oh, we'll be there.
Sweet.
We love having
if you're not
fun.
There, I'm going to freak out.
Everybody go get La 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 La's new album right now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Bananas. This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced and engineered by Katie Levine.
Theme music by Kahan.
And all of our artwork is done by Travis Millard.
You can follow us on Instagram at The Bananas Podcast, where we post stories every day and things that we don't cover on the podcast.
Listen, subscribe, and please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast.
And if you're interested in advertising on Bananas, please email us at thebananaspodcast@gmail.com. That's thebananaspodcast@gmail.com.